For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
We're going to try to cover a little bit of the parsha, concentrating mostly on Purim.
We're in Leviticus?
No, yeah. After. After 27,
okay.
What parsha, from the birth of Moshe, what parsha is he not mentioned in? There's only one parsha from his birth that he's not mentioned in.
This one.
This is it. Moshe Rabbeinu, from his birth, as we said, is in every single parsha except this one. The reason being that after the sin of the golden calf, he asked forgiveness, and he says, if you don't forgive the people, wipe me out of your book. And a klala chacha mafil atanai, he bought a curse of a wise person, even on condition it comes true. Even though Hashem did forgive him, he's wiped out partially from the book. Which book? Well, one portion of the book, the Parsha Tetzaveh. That's the wiping out. Why this Parsha? Of all the Parshias of the Torah, why is he wiped out of this one? A lot of answers are given. One, this Parsha deals with the priestly clothes, the clothes of the Kohen Gadol. And originally, Moshe Rabbeinu was supposed to be the Kohen Gadol. But since he, on his level, argued with Hashem for 7 days at Mount Sinai about to lead the people or not, he was like rebuked by Hashem and says, you know, I had in mind for you to be the Kohen and Aaron to be the Levi, but now I'm going to reverse that. Okay? I'm going to reverse that, and he is to be the Kohen. So you're going to lose out on the high priesthood. Therefore, this parasha that deals with the clothes of the high priest, he's not mentioned.
No, it's not relevant to him.
Yeah, sort of. Okay, the other thing is that, do you know what the yahrzeit and his birthday of Moshe Rabbeinu is?
2 days ago.
That's right. The Zion Adar, the seventh day of Adar. Seventh day of Adar is Moshe's birth and his yahrzeit. As a matter of fact, on Zion Adar here at the shul, is a traditional to have the Chevra Kedisha, right? The annual, like, a dinner for the Chevra Kedisha.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so by and large, on most years, this parsha is read during the week that the 7th of Adar lands. And again, this year it did. At Tzaveh is during the week of the 7th Adar, the Yahrzeit of Moshe Rabbeinu. This then is the parsha that his name is not mentioned. Okay? I'm going to share with you something. And this has a lot to do with the theme that we're going to try to cover today. The theme we're trying to cover today in both the Parsha and the upcoming holiday Purim is Jewish pride. The Gemara talks about that Hashem cries over three things every day, three or four things. One of them is that the Jewish people, we have lost our Yiddish shtolz. We've lost our Jewish pride. Okay? Every trait is neutral. Every trait can be used as a positive end. Things that we consider negative, like jealousy, kina, jealousy, well, that can be used. It can be Kaddish Kedoshim. It can be one of the most holy things you could possibly use. Example, who used this trait? Pinchas is called a kanoi. He's called a zealous, jealous person for his God. And he took a spear, he killed two people and saved thousands because a plague was spreading, killing thousands of people. God willing, we'll read about this later. And Pinchas stopped that plague by killing two sinners. Okay, and he's called someone who is jealous, zealous for his God, and he used that attribute in a positive way and became the Holy of Holies. So too every attribute. Now, we think of certain attributes as being very negative, along with kina, jealousy, and that is one of the main ones, right? The ego, the gaiva. We call it in Hebrew gaiva, gaava, right? Conceit, pride, right? Being egotistical, conceited. Again, this is something, as we see from our Gemara, can be used in a very positive way. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to use gaiva. He wants us to use conceit, ego, in a positive way, that we should be proud that we're Jews. We should be so proud that we're Jews that we want to have nothing to do with the rest of the world. Now, you guys are going to jump all over that. Obviously, I don't mean we have mitzvahs specifically in the Torah to get along with everybody. We have a sort of a mitzvah to give tzedakah to non-Jews for the sake of peace. Okay, there's nobody that gets more involved with the non-Jewish world in acts of chesed than the Jewish people. The problem is, our problem is that we go beyond the norms and we bend over backwards to show that we want to be like everybody else. We need a little bit more Yiddish shtoltz to be proud that we're Jews, and at least in the mental framework that we want to have nothing to do with how they think out there, their culture, their civilization. Sure, there's good things to bring out of it, but there's more of a danger that we want to assimilate their values, their culture, and what they think is funny, what they think is entertaining, into us. This has a lot to do with Purim. This also has a lot to do with our major problem today, the misuse of gaiva. We misuse this attribute of being conceited, of being egotistical where it should be, in the realms of being a proud Jew, and we use it exactly opposite. What do I mean? We here are Rebbeim, our Gedolim, our leaders, our Torah leaders, or Rashi, or Rambam, or, you know, any of our commentators. They cite an opinion. They make a statement. They tell us what to do. We say, oh, that's nice. Well, he has his opinion, and I got my opinion. You notice, and we do this all the time. Okay? I'm going to give you an example.
That's living in an egalitarian democratic society. Everything's equal.
Yeah, that's a goalist mentality.
Right.
That's also that equates to a goalist mentality. Rashi. And this goes, by the way, for Rabbi Feldman in our community, for Rabbi Shach, all over Israel, and it goes for our Torah commentaries. Rashi, I'm going to tell you a quick story about Rashi. Rashi, just to tell you, I'm going to preempt this story with another story. Rashi, just to tell you what he was about. This is coming from a non-Jewish non-Jewish person. There used to be a famous general for the French army, Sir Godfrey Bull. I can't remember his last name. B-O-U-L-V-I-N, something like that. Sir Godfrey, he was known as. He's a very famous general. And he recognized, he hated Jews, but he recognized Rashi as being a saint, a very wise person. This is not unusual. During the time of the Chofetz Chaim, people recognized that Chofetz Chaim was a saint, a tzaddik, but they hated Jews. And they used to, in fact, the story is told how they used to let Chofetz Chaim have one single cow. So what did they used to do? They used to go to the backyard of Chofetz Chaim, let his cow out, so the cow would walk on their field, and the Chofetz Chaim would be forced to fetch his cow. And the fact that the tzaddik would walk on their field, they felt their field would be blessed. It wouldn't stop them the next day from having a pogrom on the Jews. They felt that, they didn't find that to be a contradiction. Okay. Back to our story. Sir Godfrey recognized that Rashi was a very wise man, even though he hated Jews, and he wanted him to be part of his cabinet, part of his counselors. And Rashi, of course, did not want to be involved in politics. So, in that case, Sir Godfrey wanted to kill Rashi. So he went over there, and Rashi had developed, so we know nothing. This is going to sound like hocus pocus to you guys. But Rashi had already developed that he was mind over matter. He was out of the dimension of this world. He could render himself invisible. And Sir Godfrey came to the, all the doors were open to his house, the sporn were open on the table, and there was no Rashi. And Sir Godfrey, they recognized, they had more, the Roshon, the wicked people of those generations, knew more than we don't know today. They said, I know you're here, and you rendered yourself invisible. You hear this? I'm like, I know you did this. And during the time of Rebbe, by the way, Antoninus, which was the Roman emperor, used to study with Rebbe. He was a righteous king, a righteous non-Jewish king, a Gentile king. And there was once a resurrection of the dead. One of his servants, he used to kill his servants so they wouldn't tell the Roman government that he, the king, the emperor, was learning with the Jew. So he used to kill him. It was a dangerous thing to escort this guy because he used to kill him. So one of Rashi's, Rebbe's men resurrected him. And Antoninus said, that doesn't impress me. I know the least one of your students can resurrect the dead. It was common knowledge. We're so out of it. Anyways, Rashi burned himself invisible. Godfrey said, I'm not going to harm you. I need to talk to you. So Rashi reappeared, and he says, listen, I want to go to war against Judea. What's going to happen? So Rashi, and prophecy, he told him, you know, at first, you're going to be very successful. But then you're going to be routed. And they're going to chase you out of there. You're going to end up with only two horsemen. Yourself and two horsemen, that's it. And Sir Godfrey got boiling mad. He says, mark my words, if I come back with three horsemen, I'll have your head. Everything went just like Rashi said. Went to Judea. First he was successful. Then he was routed. Ran away with three horsemen. He came, still there, an ark. There's this famous ark there in France. He came underneath this ark, him and his three horsemen, and one of the stones came loose just then and killed one of them out. And Godfrey saw that Rashi saw everything. So now he went to pay homage to Rashi. He went there, but by that time Rashi had already passed away. So Godfrey made that Thursday, it was the third Thursday in July, I believe, into a national, a saint's day in honor of Rashi. And it was for a long time celebrated in France, the third Thursday of July. Amazing story. That's what Rashi's about. Now, in art, what does it have to do with our Torah portion? What does this have to do with Yiddish Shtolz, Jewish pride? I'll tell you. In our Torah portion, description of, we already mentioned, the Kohen Gadol's clothes, eight different garments. A regular Kohen had four garments. Well, one of those garments was an ephod, an apron-like garment, Listen to this Rashi. Rashi usually only comes to tell you the simple meaning of the verse, ephod. Lo shamati, I haven't heard what this is exactly. V'libi oimerli, and my heart tells me that k'min shechoygras asaras k'sherocheves al susim. My heart tells me it's like those type of garments that princesses, noble women, wear when they're going out horseback riding. So Rashi, you look it up in Eddie Chumash. So.
I have a figure that's dressed like the Kohen Gadol. I'm going to bring it in to show everybody what the garments look like.
Okay. Well, I'm going to wait for the end of the story because I don't want you to miss this. And then we'll bring it in. I saw it in there. Okay. That's it. Okay. So I got to tell you something about Rashi. Rashi was a very holy man. when he used to walk, you saw fine people today do this also, very holy people. They walk, they look straight down at the ground. They don't want to see anything that for them would be a breach of modesty, whether it's a woman not clothed properly or whether it's just, mishugas on the road or billboards, whatever it is. They don't look beyond their dalet amos, their 6 feet. Rashi was such a tzaddik. And Hashem, there's a special, siyata d'shamayah, special heavenly assistance that Hashem guards tzaddikim. They don't see things they shouldn't see. You know, a baal atayr m'sayinos, a person who comes to be purified is helped. In the way the man wants to be led, he's led. Okay? So, one day, Rashi was learning, right? He was learning in his room. And all of a sudden, he looked up out the window, and what did he see? He saw this woman, a noble woman, obviously. She could tell nobility. Riding a horse! It bothered him tremendously. It was very painful to him because for him to even look at outside of his wife, you know, that for him, on his level, that was a breach of modesty, and it bothered him tremendously why that happened. So, you know, he tried to put it in the back of his mind, and he went back and he started writing his commentary on the Torah, and when he got to this part with the ephod, right, this apron-like arm, he couldn't figure out what it was. And really, Bali couldn't figure out what it was. What is this? He couldn't, the description, everything, couldn't figure out what it was. And then all of a sudden, he had the flashback. Why Hashem usually always protects him from seeing, you know, what he considers immodest. All of a sudden, he saw that. It was directly from Hashem to realize how the ephod really was. It's just an interesting story on Rashi. And that's what it means here. The libi oimeli, my heart tells me it's like, my heart tells me he's being very modest, that Hashem gave him a sign. It's like this apron, this garment that a woman, a noble woman wears, horseback riding. Okay.
Would you like me to get that to show everybody? It's sort of interesting, isn't it?
Okay, let me get to the punchline here. This amusing little story was not just to tell you a story about Rashi. The point of the story is that Rashi had what's called Siyata d'Shamayim, a heavenly assistance, which every Torah leader, rabbinical leader, legitimate rabbinical leader of a city, of a nation, is endowed with. Moshe Rabbeinu had it, right? Yoshua had it, right? Right? A rabbi of your city has it. It's especially God, even if that person normally is not worthy. For example, there's an expression in the Talmud, Yiftach Medoro Kishmul Medoro, Jephthah. One of the judges, one of the least known judges, was as great in his generation as Samuel, who was the greatest in his generation. That means once Hashem makes you a leader, he endows you with special abilities. And you see it over and over again. It says by Samson, it says by Gideon, right? And the Spirit of God came upon them. Hashem's going to be, okay, my point in all this is that we have a basic fundamental Jewish belief that our great tzaddikim, like Rashi, Ramban, Nachmanides, Maimonides, these type of people, they all wrote with Siyat Shemayah, they all wrote with Ruach HaKodesh, a minor form of prophecy. And when I quote them, you know, or you hear words by them, you can't dismiss them. Well, that's his opinion, and I got my opinion. Rav Shiller once made the following statement. Rav Shiller is one of the Rosh Hashivas of Or Sameach. He described Judaism as a hierarchy of opinion, describes a democracy of opportunity, but an aristocracy of opinion. Everybody confused?
Can you read that again?
No, that's good.
Okay. Judaism, in its hierarchy of opinion, describes a democracy of opportunity, but an aristocracy of opinion. Therefore, we have to always remember when we're quoting, oh, thank you, when we're quoting...
She was inspired.
Okay, therefore, when we hear Rashi, the bottom line here is, we'll go over this in a second. When we hear Rashi, we're hearing the words, the living translation of Hashem speaking to us. When you hear Rashi, okay? That's what's got to be borne in mind here. And this goes for any of the great commentaries. Okay.
Could you just tell us the other
now,
things that make God cry? Oh, you don't remember them.
I don't remember them. I'm
okay.
Sorry.
Okay.
I'll try to find it.
Okay.
What
was the second part?
That we don't have
cry.
Yeah.
Where in the Torah portion does it say to remember, this week's portion, it says remember
Moloch? It doesn't say it's this week. This week, we at Machtir, at the end, we read a special Torah portion called Zachor. It's from Deuteronomy, right?
This is when you're quoting here, Deuteronomy 5:17-19.
Right.
We add it to the Torah
at the end, right?
This week.
Okay. The point of all this, again, this is the area that we seem to use our ego. We seem to dismiss the opinions of our Torah leaders as that's their opinion. We have our opinions, as we mentioned. And instead, we should be devoting that guy of an ego to having Jewish pride. I mention this because we live in a society that bends over backwards to defend certain people who, I got to tell you, it's not just wrong, it's machazik yodei rasha, that were helping strengthen the hands of wicked people. And instead of being concerned about those minorities, let me read you some facts that should instill some Jewish pride in us. This direct correlation to Purim. 1/3 of Americans, 6 million Jews, that's 2 million people, 2 million Jews, no longer consider themselves Jews. 10% convert to cults and other religions every year. Over 70% of secular American Jews are intermarrying. 70%. Almost 3/4. Everybody in this room knows people that are, you know, have non-Jewish spouses. Or they call them spouses. And this is the killer. This bottom statistic is more dangerous than the rest because I'm talking about the next generation. More than half of the 2 million Jewish children under 18 in America are being raised in other faiths. Only 800,000 are being raised as Jews. 1,200,000 are being raised in other faiths. That's the next generation. This is what you need to be concerned about. Plastic bags, spotted owls, blacks, all these things. No, I'm very serious. We don't got time for that. It's nice. We don't go around abusing the world, abusing other minorities, but we sure as heck don't sit there and march for them. We got major problems. And these are being sloughed off because what's politically incorrect today. This is where the Jewish pride belongs. The story of Purim. Right.
I have 11 cousins, my generation.
Yes.
I'm the only one affiliated.
Unbelievable.
And
yours is not an unusual case.
The prior generation, the grandparent generation, was groomed.
Where's the source for these statistics that you just...
This is from Orson Mayer, which is an outreach by Tshuva Yeshiva. The story of Purim is about this. The story of Purim, like the story of any one of our holidays, is assimilation. One, to be attending, at the very beginning of the Megillah Esther, we read about how we attended a certain feast of Achashverosh. This was a feast where Achashverosh was celebrating that the prophecy of Jeremiah, Yirmiah, would not come true. It was a famous prophecy that we'd be in exile for 70 years. He calculated the 70 years ended. He brought out the correlation of our Parsha and Purim, these priestly garments, he wore them. He brought out the vessels of the temple and displayed them at this feast.
Jeremiah did.
No.
Achashverosh.
Okay.
And we went to that feast. We went to that feast and said, why did we deserve destruction during that time? The Megillah, the Gemara Megillah says, because we were nehaneh. We enjoyed the Feast of Achashverosh, which means, I got to tell you, the feast was perfectly kosher. Achashverosh made the feast kosher on purpose, so he was very clever, so we would anger God. In other words, we didn't eat anything treif, and there was nothing wrong with eating at that feast, but we enjoyed it. First came to one of the Lubavitcher Rebbe's once, and he was in prison. There was no kosher food to eat. Rebbe, do I have, you know, I have nothing to eat. I have to, you know, this non-kosher meat. Can I eat it? He says, of course, it's a mitzvah to eat it. But don't break the bones. And, right, exactly. Don't enjoy. The problem is we enjoyed. How can a Jew enjoy watching the vessels, the priestly garments of the destruction of our temple, a celebration that we're not going to be exiled? He was wrong. We were exiled, but he miscalculated. That's what this was, a celebration. You Jews are Persians forever. Forget about the land of Israel. Forget about the Holy Temple. Purim, of all holidays, left and right, things don't make any sense in it. There's no other holiday that's named after the disaster. Right? Pesach. We call Pesach because Hashem, right, skipped over. Right? And saved us. Right? Hanukkah, the rededication of the temple. Hanukkah means rededication. Right? Right? Shavuos. Right? The festival of weeks. Sukkot, we dwell in the booths. Hashem protected us. Purim, the lottery that was cast to destroy us. We named the holiday after the very thing that was trying to destroy us. Other things about Purim don't make sense. There's no holiday that we go into it fasting. That's a rule. You'll find, right? Right? There's no such... You're not allowed to fast going into the holiday because it's considered a bizarre, a lack of respect for the holiday to go in there, you know, suffering, right? So you don't fast before Pesach or before Shavuot. You're not allowed to, right? And in Purim, we have a fast before. No other holidays like that. Judaism, which preaches a must, a balance in everything, don't overindulge in the physical, right? Don't overeat. Don't. On Purim, we have a mitzvah to drink and to get intoxicated. Very unusual. On Purim, we usually have a rule. It's much better to do a mitzvah yourself than to get an agent to do it. That's the rule. That's the rule. If you have an opportunity to give tzedakah or send someone else to, it's much better to give yourself to do the mitzvah yourself. On Purim, we do just the opposite with the mitzvah called Shalach Manos. Dafka, you got to do it by an agent. Over, I'll cite more and more and more things as we go along, but Purim overall does things that. Huh?
You don't give your own Shalach
Manos? No, the proper way to do it is to appoint an agent for you. You give to her, and say, I want to give to Trudy, please say this. And yes, that's the way we do Shalach Manos, the most proper way. There you go. I'll accept this officially on Purim, so you'll have the mitzvah. Okay, thank you. So that, many other things with Purim that just we don't do with any other holiday, right? Okay, another arena, right? You know, we're having a Purim spiel here, and there's this mask, and there's gaiety and laughter on Purim. Which on other holidays, there's a certain decorum, right? And we seem to throw that out the window on Purim, right? Now, there's no such thing, and I think that's the one book I forgot to bring, is the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch, which is the code of Jewish law, which says specifically, by the way, if a person's going to drink and he's going to not say brachas properly and not be able to daven ma'ariv, you don't drink. There's no such thing as throwing halacha out the window one day a year. So let's make that perfectly clear. That's what makes Purim so difficult. Purim is a very difficult holiday. In Kabbalah, it's considered the holiest day of the year. Ze'er Anpin is called a miniature, a microcosm of the future times of redemption. Okay, now we'll go into it. What does all this mean? Sefer Yetzirah was a book written by Avraham Avinu, our father Avraham. It's a mystical book. I think some people say it comes down even from Adam. A very mystical book on Kabbalah. It goes through all the months of the Jewish calendar and says, you know, this month is represented by this letter and this letter. When it comes to the month of Adar, it says the following. Adar, which is featured by Purim, Himloch Ois Kuf B'schok, crown the letter Kuf, as in Kedusha, in the word Schok, laughter. That's what Purim is all about. You know, before we bench on Shabbos, you remember the Shir HaMaalos we always say? Right, Shir HaMaalos B'Shuv Hashem at Zion. Yep, when Hashem returns us back at Zion, what will happen? Az Yemale Schok Pinu. Our mouths will be full of laughter, a full laughter. Right? And then it goes on, it says, we'll be kicholmi, we'll be like dreamers. The whole exile will be like a dream. It'll be such a joyous time at the end of, during times of the ultimate redemption, the name Mashiach, will be. As Yemal Skopino will be full of laughter and all that Tzoros went through, it would be like a dream.
Something else to this equation. The Arizal. The Arizal, have anybody hear of the Arizal? The Ari HaKadosh?
Oh, Ari.
The Ari, right. Big Makubal in Kabbalah. He opened up the doors of Kabbalah where we can somewhat, you know, understand little bits of aspects of it today. So he said that this is a famous shot by the Arizal. He says, Yom Kippurim. You know, it's written in the Torah about Yom Kippur. It's called Yom Kippurim. Yom Kippurim. But, you know, another way of reading that, a kaf before a word means like. Yom Kippurim, a day like Purim. Yom Kippur is a day almost like Purim, but not quite as holy. Amazing statement. Okay, let's try to tie these all together. We're going to work backwards. First of all, Yom Kippur, and what Arizal is trying to tell you, is that on Yom Kippur, you're in shul. And we've mentioned this in the past, and you're fasting, you're abstaining from the physical world. You're davening all day. So there, it's relatively easy to know that you're doing this l'shem shemayim. You're doing this sincerely. You're doing this for righteous motives. No one fasts because they enjoy it. It's relatively easy to get close to God that way. Yom Kippurim. Purim is a day you do just the opposite. There's no time in the Jewish calendar that you're not to, that you're allowed to take God off your mind. Yom Kippur, you have God on your mind, fasting and davening. Okay, I can do that. Purim, higher. Get involved in the physical, drink, eat, festive, be joyous, laughter, all within the boundaries of serving Hashem. That's much harder. Sefer Yetzirah says, I want you to crown the kuf, kedusha in tzchak. Every mida, every character trait we said can be used positively or the opposite. There's two types of laughter in the world. It says by Yishmael, Yitzachek, Mitzachek. He was laughing. Sorry, Menu saw what that was. It was a scoffing. It was a mockery of everything that was holy and spiritual in the world. He made a joke of it. Sorry, told Avram, you got to get him out of here. That's no good. That's the opposite of what we're about. So that Mitzachek is not what Purim is about. Then there's Yitzchak himself. Same word, Yitzchak, of all people to be called Yitzchak. You know, Avraham is known for Chesed. Yaakov is known for Torah, Tiferes, splendor. Yitzchak is known for strictness, seriousness, Gevura. And he's called Yitzchak to laugh? Because if you know what real laughter is, and the laughter of Purim is all about this, it's one of the highest levels you can possibly serve Hashem with. King David, when he brought the Ark into Jerusalem, he was doing cartwheels, dancing, singing. Michal, his wife, who came from a very righteous, modest family, Saul, didn't understand it, criticized David. David says, I'll do this and more. Laughter and singing and joyous to serve Hashem. That's what Purim's about. On Purim, we're supposed to get joyous, and we're supposed to drink. And we're supposed to be happy, but not lightheadedness. We're supposed to have the kuf in tzchak, the kedusha in laughter. That's what Purim's about. Okay, great. That's what it's about. Why? Why are we supposed to be happy? What are we supposed to be happy about? What's the joy? What's going to be joyous? Fine, I'm not supposed to be lying, I'm not supposed to be frivolous. Good. But what's the essence of Purim that's supposed to make me so happy more than any other day? Good. Even more. Right. Even more. Something deeper. What's the national pride? I mean, you're right on the money if you know what is national pride for Judaism. It's not a flag and singing Hatikvah. It's a relationship with God. It's Torah, Doraisa, Kodesh Baruch Hu, Chadu, Hashem, the Torah, and Israel. We're all one entity. There's a verse in Megillah Esther. You've heard of the verse because you say it every Saturday night in Havdalah. Jews had, this is in the article, the Jews had Torah, excuse me, Ayu Divinza, Ora Simchasam Yakar Ikar. They had light, Ora Simcha, they had joy, Soson, right? Happiness, another form of joy, the Yikar, hard to translate, precious. Yikar, splendor, whatever. They have these things. Listen to what the Gemara... Listen to what the Gemara in Tractate Megillah says about this. So when it says, La'yehudim ayesa oira, that we had light, don't read it light, it means we had Torah. Torah Or, right? Torah Or, to Oraisa in Aramaic. That's what does that say? That's Simcha. Oh, that means Yontif. That means we had Yontif. At Sasan, what is Sasan? That means we had Bris Mila. Vayikar, what's Vayikar? That means Tefillin. So, for the Shirim, Svasems, they ask, if the Gemara wanted to tell us that the Jews had Torah, Yontif, right? Bris Mila and Tefillin, just say, Vayuidim, Hayasa, Torah, Yontif, Bris Mila and Tefillin. Why tell me that they had Ora, Simcha, Sasan? You're going to start, you know, strip a stray here and tell me this means that and that means this. What the talk of Purim's all about. This is what to be happy about Purim's all about. The Jews always had the mitzvahs. The Jews always had these mitzvahs. There's nothing new now at the end of Purim that it was at the beginning of the mitzvah, at the beginning of the story. We always had these mitzvahs. But something happened during the time of Purim. During the time we defeated Amalek, Haman, that now these mitzvahs were in a whole different category. Haman said it. He said, there's a nation that are sleeping through the mitzvahs, they darshan. The Gemara darshan, that's what he was saying. Yeshno amachad. There is a certain nation. So they make a play on words. Yishan. They sleep. They're sleepwalking through the mitzvahs. They get up. They say, they mumble the brachas. There's no enthusiasm. Right? It's gotten old to them. Their God is sleeping. They're sleeping through mitzvahs. Yeah, we can easily defeat them. Haman was not an idiot. He might have been wicked, but he wasn't an idiot. He knew the strength of Israel. All the wicked people did. Goliath, 40 days and 40 nights. Right? He was up there. You know what he was trying to do? For it, challenging. He knew. The Gemara says that if Israel just says Shema Yisrael, in the morning and evening we'll be victorious in war. That's enough merit for us to be victorious in war for 40 days and 40 nights. 40 days, 40 nights is when Moses got the Torah. He was trying to offset that. In the darkness, in the realm of darkness, he was trying to upset, you know, the parallel in holiness. It gets very deep. But Goliath knew what he was doing. All the wicked people knew what they were doing. Right? And Ahasuerus knew what he was doing to get us to enjoy that Suda. Right? And here Haman also knew, when we are weak in mitzvahs, God, so to speak, is going to sleep, and he can get rid of us. That's what he's trying to do. What we did on Purim, we had a reawakening. Kibul v'kibul, it says. We re-accepted the Torah. A higher acceptance than Mount Sinai. In the darkness, no miracles. Mordechai and Esther are the last of the prophets. That's it. The curtain's down. No open miracles anymore. You gotta see Hashem's gloved hand working through chancellors and prime ministers. All these things that we think are just coincidence. Mikra. That's Amalek talking. Amalek says, this week's parsha, we read Zohar, it says, Asher karcha baderach. He met you on the way. Play on words. Karcha is from the word mikra, which means coincidence. Happenstance. He makes you think everything is coincidence. It just happens that we have this particular president, this particular prime minister. It just happened that Esther was chosen queen. It just happened Vashti was killed. Right? No. There is no coincidence in the world. That's the lesson of Purim. And even the thing that looks like the most chance, a lottery, that too is an agency of Hashem. The poor, the lottery was cast for a certain day. Adar, the merit of Moses is with us. Right? It gave us 11 months to do tshuva. A lot of things involved. A lot of things involved. But even, that's why it's called Purim. We call it Purim because to show that even that that we think is the most to chance, a lottery, that's also from Hashem's hands. Even the book. You know, Hashem, the only book of the Tanakh, of the 36 books of the Tanakh, Hashem's name is not mentioned. Megillah Esther. That's the whole point. To see Hashem, to see a Kodesh Baruch Hu, where he's not openly there. That's why Purim will always be with us. That's what it says. It says at the end of Megillah Esther, chapter 9, verse 28, it says, in these days of Purim will never leave the Jewish people. And they learn from this that even in the future, when the time of Mashiach comes, ultimate redemption, if we have none of the other holidays, Purim will always be with us. Because again, Purim is a microcosm of what's going to happen at the end of days. We said we should sing in Shir HaMaalos, then our mouths will be full of laughter. And that is Purim is a microcosm of that laughter. Why? We defeated Amalek. He tries to tell you everything's coincidence. He tries to cool off your enthusiasm. Karka b'derach. Again, the word karka is related to the word kar, cold. He chills off your enthusiasm. After the battle of Amalek, of Haman, we defeated them. There, we also defeated the internal Amalek. The internal Amalek, which in Kabbalah is synonymous with the Yetzer Hara, within each and every one of us, that tried to make us take our Yiddishkeit for granted, that we lose our Jewish pride, and we go squander it on other things of the world. That tries to make you feel that's no big deal being a Jew, it's no big deal saying mitzvahs and learning Torah and doing mitzvahs. We defeated that internal Amalek so that at the end of the story of Purim, we say, La Yehudim, Hayasa, Ora, Simcha, the Sasan, the Yikar, and we don't say we had Torah, right? And we had Tefillin. Why? Why do we say it that way? Because now, only now, we had a Kibbul b'Kibbul, we reaccepted the Torah. Higher than Mount Sinai, in the darkness, we saw the beauty of Hashem's Torah and His mitzvahs. We saw what Ashreinu Matov Chalkeinu, how happy is our lot to be a Jew. We realized that Yehudi Maisa Ora. You know what Ora is? That's not Ora. That's not a light. You know what true light is? Torah. Torah is Ora. That's light. That the essence of light is really Torah. Simcha. You know what true Simcha is? Simcha is a nunt. We realized that we saw it. We didn't take our Yiddishkeit for granted. That true simcha, a true joy, that's a yontav, the essence of a yontav is simcha. They're synonymous. Sason, that is bris milah. Yikar, that is tefillin. We had the mitzvahs before, but now we realize the chashivas of them, the importance of them. That's what it means. Moitzei Shabbos in Havdalah, before we go to the workaday week again, we repeat this. Because we're going to go back out there, right? With all the secular values and all the brainwashing and propaganda of what's important in the world. To focus. Don't forget Yiddel. Don't forget my kinder. Don't forget what's really important. You're going back out in the secular world. Remember, these are the important things. Hashem, the Torah, the mitzvahs. So that's what happened on Purim. That's why we read that phrase the way it is. Again, going back, Purim is a microcosm of Yemei HaMashiach. What's the inyan of Schach? We still didn't answer that. Sorry, I forgot. Why are we so joyous on Purim? We answered it actually partially. We're joyous because we're Jews. Asher b'char banu mikol amim. We're the Am HaNivchar. Enjoy it. You are the chosen people. You're all queens. You're all kings. You are it. You're what's the world about. There's no Jews, there's no Torah, there's no world. That's a fact, literally. For Reishis, Hashem created the world for two Reishis. Beis, Reishis. Torah and Israel. That's it.
So we don't know people.
Have their purpose. They build the roads. They take care of the secular world. And they get their share of accomplishment. Right? They're supposed to make things easier for us. I'll be happy if they just don't get in our way. They try to trip us. In the future, I got to tell you something. You're right. You're right to a certain degree. Anything that happens, you can say, is our fault. Because if we're on the high enough spiritual level, right, that's true. But I got to tell you, and you're right, Debbie, I'm not. But we got to be careful of that statement. At the same time, there's two statements. There's this statement, and there's a statement that if it wasn't for Shibud Malchus, if it wasn't for the persecution of the non-Jewish world, you know Hashem, our will is to do your will. Every Jew, if we weren't affected by that gracious society out there, every Jew would be doing his will. So it works both ways. It's because of their influence, their physical persecution, I'm quoting Gemara for you, the physical persecution and the mental persecution of culture, you know, because of that, we're not doing what we're supposed to do. And then because we're not doing what we're supposed to do, we have a physical enemy. So it works both ways. Our society today loves to put, I know we're in a tear-down society, revisionist of history. Like to take down certain people, like Columbus, start whacking them up. Now, no proof. All of a sudden, they're barbarians, they're murderers, right? They're homophobes, all these things, right? Our society also likes, our own people like to do this. We like to say, you know, which is good. It's a humble quality, but we overdo it. It's our fault. It's all our fault. We have no one to blame. We shouldn't blame the blacks that they're killing people in Crown Heights. We should have blamed the Muslim Arabs that they're bombing. Right? It's our fault.
Well, you know,
it's true, but that's only half the problem.
I'm not saying that.
I'm saying what you're saying is correct. I'm saying there's an over-leaning towards that direction. And you got to have a balance. You got to read, there's other factors. And this cheer is about Yiddish Stoltz, about being pride that you're a Jew. On the other hand, I got to tell you, we're doing unbelievable. In this assimilation, in this darkness, which started in Purim, we're learning Torah and mitzvahs without prophets, without our leaders. We're an orphan generation. There's a lot to be proud of. We live in a time of direct polarization. We have the most Baal Teshuvahs ever. People coming from completely no background come to Yiddishkeit. And on the other hand, we have those statistics I read to you. We have more assimilation than ever. So it's a very strange time we live in. Could be. So what you're saying is true, Debbie, but we got to be very careful. We also,
100% scale. I'm
saying this. What you're saying is true, and we always have to be aware of that. We always have to be aware of that. We cause our own problems. At the same time, we also got to be a little upset why we're always, you know, bombarded by that culture and that the values out there in the secular society that we have to go, you know, and sometimes we have to go along to get along. You know, we get sucked in. So you got to have both of them, and you can't lean more on one another. Now, again, Purim's a microcosm, Mei Mashiach. Az Yimala Schok Pinu. Then our mouths will be full of laughter. And I want to tell you something that absolutely nobody in this room is going to relate to, and I can't relate to it either, because I'm burning mad over the Holocaust. I'm burning mad that Jews are being bombed and killed. But it's the truth, so I have to deal with it. And so do you. Inyan of Schok. The idea of schok, of laughter, is the following. The main laughter is going to come the final redemption, and that's what we say in Shir HaMaalos. Then our mouths will be full of laughter, right? Because we'll see how everything nehafach turned over to be good. Do you remember that famous line in Megillah? Nehafachu. You even have a song when we sing it. Everything turned around. Haman built a tree to hang Mordechai on, right? He was hung on it. He plotted to destroy the Jews. He was destroyed. He accumulated all this wealth. It went to Mordechai and Esther. Everything he plotted, nahafachu, a turnaround. So the Mei Mashiach, the same thing's going to happen. Schok, the idea of schok is, even, you know, in secular comedy, they use this. A dignified person, right? A dignified man walking in the top hat and cane, right? And he just looks perfect. And he slips on a banana peel. Why is that fun? It's funny because the opposites, a direct opposite to what he looked like, right? That makes it funny. Schok, Israel looks so downtrodden and looked down upon, right? It's amazing. This society, which has all of a sudden this preachness of a tolerance to everything and every minority, you don't have it to the Orthodox Jew. I got a friend who's been looking for a job now for 2 months, right? Number one, he can't get one because he's not a woman, not a black. So, they're forced to hire those. I'm not saying they're not good at ones, but to bend over backs to hire them if there's other people that are just as qualified or more qualified, that's not good. You don't want that. And the ones I hate the most are the good women that are qualified and the good blacks are qualified because it makes them look bad. Okay? So here, because he's an Orthodox Jew and he wears his yarmulke, right, they won't hire him. And they'll tell him straight to his face. And they can't get in any trouble. They could never do that if he was a woman or a black. Okay? So this society that the Jews are downtrodden, they're looked down upon. So what's going to happen at the end of the days? Everybody's going to see how the Jewish people are it. We're the princesses. We're what it's all about. That's the hafachu. That's the direct opposite. That's going to be the reason for Az Yimala Schok Pinu. Our mouths will be full of laughter. This whole time you thought we were this. Now you look down upon us. Now you're going to see that we're what it's all about. He goes on, he explains that also everything that we saw, this is the hard part for us to digest, everything that we have into our history that looked like it was bad for us, the persecutions, the pogroms, inquisitions, all these terrible things, we're all going to see that they were all steps for the final redemption. They were all a means to an end. I don't understand it either. That's it. This theme is repeated over and over again. Okay? And everything that happened to us, here it is, was for our ultimate benefit. an amazing concept. We talked about this on Pesach, actually, while we had the matzah and maror together. Maror represents the persecution, matzah, the freedom. We eat them together because they're both part of the same whole. They were both needed for redemption. Again, we don't understand this. We don't understand this. But we'll see that will be the ultimate laughter. The ultimate laughter. We'll see that there was everything that happened to us was really for our benefit. That's truly something to be happy about. Purim is a microcosm of that. Esther, a tzedakis, an unbelievable righteous person, is taken and forced to live with a non-Jew. That's a tragedy, right? And what happens from that? That's the instrument of redemption. Haman is given this unbelievable power. He becomes viceroy, like vice president. From that, Dafka, from that Beretzah, his position goes over to Mordechai. All the wealth he accumulated, he was a multi-millionaire. Why is such a wicked person all that power and money? Because that's going to go to Mordechai. Everything that seemed bad was a means for the good. It is expressed in the prophet in the following line, Es sarahi liyakov u mehmena yivashaya. From a trouble, from a curse, for Yaakov, for the Jewish people, will come the salvation. So, you understand it simply to me. From a troubled time, salvation will come, even in the most troubled times. So, the Gerareva says, what it means is, from the source itself will come the salvation. Paro will raise Moshe in his own court. He had the edict, right, to throw all the children to the river, the male children. And because of that, he raised the Redeemer of the Jews in his own palace. Haman, everything Haman did, became the instrument for the redemption. From the Tzara, from the Tzoras, came the salvation. So the Ger Rebbe says brilliantly, if you look at it, Esar Hiliyakov, U-Men-Mena, and from it, the Tzara will come the salvation. U-Men-Mena are the letters U-Men-Haman. And from Haman himself will come the salvation. Rearranged letters, spells U-Men-Haman. From Haman itself comes the salvation. Okay, that's the ending to sum it up here, because we're probably have questions. That's what Purim's all about. Purim's not an excuse to get drunk. Purim's not an excuse to be frivolous and not say brachas, not daven ha'aretz. Purim is a time to be an ultimate simcha. Why? Because that hashpah is back with us again. We have an opportunity to realize again what Torah is about, what mitzvahs are about, that we're the Am HaNivchar, we're the chosen people, Hashem's watching over us. He's protecting us, He's saving us from our enemies. We just got to do what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to be an ultimate simcha that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has picked us, that we have the Torah and mitzvahs, that we get to do them, and that there's a continual supervision of the Jewish people, and at the very end, even things that we don't understand why they're going on, they're going to end up for our ultimate benefit. There's not a greater simcha than that. To know that everything is not futile, all the craziness of the world, at the bottom line, at the very end, it's all gonna be for a purpose and a means. And no one died for no reason, and no tzoras happened to Israel for no reason. It's all being reckoned with, and it's all gonna be accounted for, and it's all gonna end up for our ultimate benefit. That's what Purim's about. Final note: what is drinking have to do with this? You know, in the secular world, they drink, right? They drink to, what's expected, to escape reality. To escape reality, they drink. The Jew does just the opposite. We drink to focus on the only reality. And forget about all the foolishness of the world. If you know how to drink properly, it says in Proverbs, Nichnas Yayin Yatsa Sud, wine enters, secrets come out.
It's not always so great. That's true. It's not always so great.
The real essence of a Jew can come out. If you drink, if a person knows how to drink, that's why it's very difficult. It's very difficult to do. That's what Yom Kippurim, a day like Purim. It's a very hard thing to do. Eat, and remember, you're celebrating. A Suda is a very mystical thing. We don't have meals. We have Sudas. It encaptures, it allows a container for the flow of blessing of that particular time. That's what a Suda does. You have a Suda when you finish a tractate. You have Sudas on Shabbos and Yom Tov. It's a very mystical thing. It provides, again, a vessel for that bracha of the holiday. So if you eat on Purim, celebrating the fact, all these ideas that we discussed on Purim, of Simcha, that we're a Jew, that we have Kadosh Baruch Hu, we have the Torah, we have mitzvahs, that he's watching over us, and you're drinking to escape all the foolishness of the world and concentrate on the only reality, Yisrael, Kodesh Baruch Hu, Doraisa Chad Hu, that Hashem, His Torah, and the Jewish people are one. There's nothing else. Freilich HaPurim. Everybody should be able to feel the Hashkoah of Purim and Taka take it throughout the year.
I just want to thank everybody for their prayers to my niece Hashem. How about a miracle? I'm asking.
Baruch Hashem.
Performed a miracle when they went in to remove the tumor after two previous procedures. The tumor was cut out of the sand.
It was gone.
And she's coming to my son's wedding.
It was gone?
Yeah. You know, Baruch the three R's, 10 R's, put a bypass in. Then they put a drain to her stomach. They went in to seal the aneurysm off. It disappeared. It had drained. It would go on. So they don't know how it happened. The Columbia Presbyterian doctors said it was a miracle. They'd never seen me like this. So I want to thank you all for your part. I hope you're all blessed for your good thoughts.
Thank you. Just to add to that, I was in 50 to 90% percentile. I have multiple
hair. Wow.
Oh, that's right. The technician said she saw some stuff. I was part of the optical information. And the next morning, the radiologist called my primary physician. I didn't have to wait to go to the neurologist. I'm calling the MS Society. Going to have a thank you.
I got to say, it's interesting. Purim is the only holiday, another person Purim, that you have personal Purims. Where a person who was saved from certain. Different people that were saved from certain disasters at certain times, like let's say it was, in the English calendar, say July 17th, they proclaimed that as their personal Purim. And one of the people that wrote one of the halachic books, Chaya Adam, had a powder keg next to him, ammunition house, storage house, blow up. And he talks about, not one person in our family escaped without losing some blood. And he talks about his wife, she lost her teeth, and I think his son got stabbed in the back, and everything. And they celebrate a certain day as their personal Purim, which is interesting. Purim is always representative of God's special supervision over us individuals and a nation, and that the salvation of Hashem is always around the corner. He's always watching over us. I want to just connect one last thing. This parsha deals with shittim wood. Shittim was a hard cedar wood. They say the world was not worthy for this wood. I don't know what this means exactly, except for the Mishkan. So a deeper aspect of that meaning means that usually we're taught to be very flexible, very easygoing, except when it comes to the Mishkan. You use a hard wood. We're to be very flexible in every area, on our own honor and everything, except when it comes to Yiddishkeit, to our Mishkan, our tabernacle. Then we got to be firm as cedar. Avram, the first Jew, he's called an Ivri. He's from the other side of the Jordan. He's the man of Chesed, right? But he could kick Yishmael out, right? If that was God's will. He could, have nothing to do with the other nations. He could split up with his own nephew, Lot, if he thought it was going to be a bad influence on his students. Listen to this final thing. The successes and failures of various projects play a pivotal role in emotional stability. In contemporary society, unfortunately, we're accustomed to dividing the issues. There's our commercial, professional, political life. We strive to derive whatever we can out of these areas. When it comes to matters of the spirit and areas of religious endeavor, however, we suddenly become mild, genteel, and obsessively tolerant. We are suddenly willing to accept numerous intrusions into our belief, and we are prepared to compromise and surrender our most precious values without a struggle. These are the exact arenas, right, that we're supposed to be strong in and not be flexible, like the wood, the shittim wood. Again, every character trait can be used for positive qualities. The tolerance of today's political incorrect, that you're supposed to use to your fellow Jew who needs help, right? Not out there. To be firm and stable, not in political leagues, not in all these other issues. There you gotta be a little more flexible and compromise. It's here with your family.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.